This was never about money for us. It was about us against the system. That system that kills the human spirit. We stand for something. To those dead souls inching along the freeways in their metal coffins, we show them that the human spirit is still alive.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of your favorite podcast, Cigars for Idiots. Do you get deja vu?
I do.
A little bit.
I mean, I'm not saying it's deja vu, but I feel like I've been here before. Oh, wait.
You can tell we haven't been here in a while because I was so pumped up and got this whole thing kicked off.
And he was three-quarter chubbed and forgot to hit the button.
I didn't hit the record button. So here we are, the red button's on, and we are rolling. Gentlemen, how was your turkey day?
It's great, man. It's great.
It was awesome.
Good. Oh, great.
It sounds like I heard it once before. Also would say again, I did not get any pecan pie.
I will also reiterate the fact that my wife's baby sister guilt tripped her into making the historic caramel pecan pie that you need a jar of insulin to eat. Two pieces were eaten. She didn't eat any of it. I looked at my wife and I was like, that motherfucker going home with us.
It's pretty phenomenal. I'll say I did venture over there a few times and stole a couple of pieces. I ain't going to lie.
Actually,
I mean, it's so sweet, it'll make a Coke taste flat.
God dang, I want to try that.
That's impressive.
I did really good. I was still in the middle of my whole
mix is off.
Somebody, is this new Coke? So, but I still try to do good. I did my little no sugar thing, and then I did the little, what was it, water bone broth thing for, 72 hours. And then I did eat, but I did not eat like a ridiculous amount of food. I just ate kind of normal and I was sick as hell. I felt terrible. And I was like, what's the benefit? I just eat and get fat and feel miserable, or I don't eat and I eat well, and don't eat a bunch of trash and still feel miserable. Like, I don't know what to do. I don't know, man. I don't know what to do.
I will tell you this. Do not, I thought I was having, actually, what I did was I pulled my hamstring somehow. And
I bet I know.
I wish.
I was going to say raking leaves.
Side. I was on the lawnmower. I got you. Then it run up in my sciatica.
That's terrible.
Yeah. It's in my gut. It's in my gut.
And then I thought, since it was running up my guts, I was like, man, do I have like a kidney stone? But I don't drink. I drink like maybe one Coke a day.
Yeah.
And then I've been drinking like clean caffeine, like green tea and stuff like that. So I went on this. I was like, fuck it. I'll just drink water for about 4 or 5 days. Dude, we went to eat last night. I had a Coke at Chick-fil-A at like 1:30. I was like, I can hear my eyelids blinking. Jesus Christ, where's this come from?
It's like I can see sounds.
Yes. So bad. I was like, this is ridiculous.
You smell colors and see sounds.
Every time the dog moved, I was like, I'm awake, motherfucker, I'm awake.
God dang. Did y'all ever take pre-workout stuff when y'all worked out?
No, I did not.
I never did.
So there was one that used to, it was Stimulate. It was S-T-I-M-U-L and then the number 8. And if I took that stuff before lunch, I was okay. If I took it after lunch, I would literally laid in the bed till 2 o'clock in the morning, like that with that same thing, like cricket. You could hear everything going on in the world. So it was terrible. And I'm pretty sure that it was great for my heart.
Oh yeah,
as well.
Oh, I'm sure.
But I know I hated that feeling. Like I hate having that feeling when you lay down. Like I can drink coffee before I go to bed, and it don't keep me awake. I can even drink energy drinks, and they don't keep me awake. But that pre-workout stuff was terrible.
So. Well, it's like this morning, I wound up, it's like 20 after 5, and I was like, I've fought this since 1. I'm just going to get up. So I made a extra cup of coffee in the normal pot, and then I had 2 cups this morning. Dude, it didn't help. Like, I swear I could have a coffee IV, and it does not do anything.
Me either.
Yeah,
me
either.
And I'm like, at like 9:30 this morning, I'm like, I've had half a pot of coffee and my eyelids, I'm having to prop them open with matchsticks. It was awful.
Yeah.
It must just be in the air. That's the way I was today. I drank so much coffee to the point it was just putting me to sleep. It wasn't doing any good.
I hate that whole feeling too, like just tired as hell, tired all the time, and you don't really even do anything. So maybe we can get a little something to gets over the hump. So let's get on the hump with this.
Did y'all see?
On today's What the Florida. A Miami woman was arrested Saturday after stabbing her boyfriend in the eye with rabies needles because he was looking at another woman, police said.
Get your ass over here, man.
I ain't seen looking at nobody. Sandra Jimenez, 44, faces aggravated battery charge.
Is she Dominican? Jamaican?
She's something that can...
Because I'm going to tell you something. If she's Jamaican, he's an idiot.
Yeah, dude. She, for apparently... They had a
domestic violence episode, is what I remember, and they got in an argument. Here's my thing. Men, y'all know if your woman's crazy.
Yeah.
Okay? Yeah, I do. Yep.
Do not go to sleep around them if you get in a fucking argument.
I mean, hasn't everybody heard Enter Sandman?
Yeah.
Sleep with one eye open, gripping your pillow tight.
That's what I don't understand. This motherfucker knew that she was crazy, and they had already... All right, so there's a local guy we all three know.
Yes.
They got in an argument. Him and his new wife got in an argument. He is awakened. She is on top of him, like laser beaming him in his sleep. You motherfucker. Like in the middle of the night.
What?
Yes. So I'm like, at what point did it not dawn on you that was going to be an option? Like, I'm going to sleep in a fucking bathtub with my pillow and a 357.
Yes.
I just...
I know a guy that went to sleep on his couch and was woke up by his ex.
Hey,
stop it.
I do, too. Yeah. 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 I know him real well.
I can see him now.
They still got the shovel. So... man, boy, I could get into one of that. I can get in that whole episode, a different episode. According to Miami police, she jumped on top of her boyfriend while they were on the couch, stabbed him in his right eyelid with rabies needles that was intended for their dog. The boyfriend called the police, was taken to Jackson Memorial Hospital. She was later found sleeping in her car, taken into custody, telling her boyfriend his injuries were self-inflicted. I didn't do it. He did it to himself.
It's that methamphetamine.
Or bath salts. We're in Dade County.
Speaking of methamphetamine, one of the local, back in the day, stud wrestlers who's been in and out of jail the rest of his adult life, got arrested again for methamphetamine.
Was it Buff Bagwell? Oh, yeah. We can talk about it later.
Well, we can't say that name out loud, but we're all sitting here going, yeah, okay.
Man, and that's what I was telling my
wife.
When you say
professional wrestling, that could go anywhere. No.
He wasn't professional like high school wrestle.
Oh.
He was like a stud when I was in high school. When I was an eighth grader, he was a senior.
Wow.
Him and the other one that was – no. The other one that hit that older – killed them two old ladies on 27.
Yeah.
Them two
that.
Son of bitches, I swear to God, they are like in like balls deep with cartel. They will kill people. And then they're like, you see them walking around 2 weeks later.
Yeah. They got it somewhere.
Dude, I know somebody that did. Yeah. I mean, it makes you wonder. She appeared early in Miami-Dade County Circuit Court. She was ordered to stay away from her boyfriend and set a bond at $7,500. She was also granted house arrest, allowed out for work and school only, or in medical appointments, also to meet with her lawyer. If you're going to go to the victim's home without the police, you are to stay there. You will be arrested, is what she was told.
Here's my thing.
Why the
Dixie Chicks?
Dude, God dang it.
The Dixie Chicks. While I do not like the Dixie Chicks after they did what they did,
Earl
had to die. Yeah. And Earl died in a phenomenal fashion. Earl, does those beans taste bad?
Them black-eyed peas.
That's what I'm saying. And that's, I don't know, y'all have seen, it's all over social media. It shows, it's like clips of that. If someone hurt your child, what would you do? And those fucking women are like, I would file a police report, or I would call 911.
I'm taking the Tim Kennedy route.
Dude, it flashes to the guy from Call of Duty with the mask, and he's cut the eyes out, so it looks like Ghost, and he's cut mm-hmm. the eyeballs out, and he's blacked his eyes out, so it looks like part of the mask. And he said, war crimes do not will not begin to describe what scorched earth I will go through to find the son of a bitch.
Yeah.
And then, like, that's what I told my wife last night. I said, to quote Tim Kennedy,
yeah,
I will wear your skin like a fucking cape.
I love that guy.
I just don't understand how, like, you'll see these things that happen.
Even my wife, sweet saint that she is, looked at me after I got done, and she was like, what's wrong with these women?
Yeah.
She goes, I would kill right now, and he's 18.
We were talking about this last night. Actually, we were talking about with Cadence. And she was like, God, you and my dad and my granddaddy. And Brittany goes, what about me? And I was like, don't leave your mama out. Because she's straight up, she'll wear somebody's meat suit like a damn tuxedo too. So, but what I don't understand is you read about these crimes that these women do. And they get, I won't even say women.
Hell hath no fury.
People get these slaps on the wrists for these.
You can burn a goddamn Wendy's down and get fucking probation and a $500 fine.
And I just listened the other day in Oakland, there's no court in Oakland that can properly try a murder trial. They don't have the people there to do it because people's left and quit. So the story was a gangbanger shot another gangbanger in the face, killed him, blew his brains out in front of everybody. And he got out in a year because there was nobody to try his case. They just let him back out on the street. Go ahead, son.
Was it Baltimore? Sorry,
we oppressed you.
Was it Baltimore? It was one of them liberal-ass cities that was like defund the police, and now they're 200 police officers short and just can't understand why crime's so fucking high.
What I saw was, I think Los Angeles has 500 policemen short. I think they got, like, Oakland's 250 short. But it's just, yeah, dude, like, these people commit these crimes, and there's really, like, there's no justice.
Me and you go shoplift, they'll put us under the jail.
Dude, I can't even go fart in a Walmart without probably getting in trouble.
Oh, I heard about that.
Well, it turned into more than a fart.
It was a shart.
And I just had to be in the grocery section.
We gotta go now. What's a shark?
Hand me that loaf of bread and stop asking questions. This ain't Nutella.
Get your ass in the car.
This ain't Nutella.
That's crunchy peanut butter.
I just beat my head on the mic on that one. Jesus Christ.
Better than your meat.
So,
I mean, that's under the table.
Y'all. On the microphone.
It's still cold.
So, it is.
It's his mic from now on.
Yeah, you use that one for good. Debs, what we're going to get into tonight, I don't know. I'd never heard this.
Sorry.
It's okay.
God damn, what are you using? 60 grit? God damn, boy, you got some calluses.
What was that on TV when we're experiencing technical difficulties and has that elevator music playing in the back? Let's talk about the ghost of Highway 20.
Let's talk about this son of a bitch.
That's a hell of a transition.
Let's talk about some crime. Let's talk about some murderous intentions. They got away with it forever.
Jesus Christ. So... we're professionals. This is a damn amateur over here we're having to deal with. All right. So, Kay Turner.
Okay. I'm back.
She was well known to, she liked to run before running was cool in Oregon. I've never thought running was cool myself, but anyway.
Me neither.
She vanished 40 years ago while she was out running on an empty road in rural central Oregon. Basically, the theory was she had been picked up, kidnapped, and done away with. They just couldn't prove it. Well, like...
and they wanted to pin it on her poor husband.
Yeah, that poor guy, man. I felt so bad.
She was cheating on him, and he did catch her.
But at the same time, I think... but and we say this on our podcast. You always start
with
zero
the boyfriend. Or the
boyfriend, yeah. Husband, wife, whatever, mother, father, yep. Whatever. And then work your way out. Once you clear, and work your way out.
Whoever could quite possibly be attached to an insurance policy.
Exactly.
Yes.
So they did the right thing. I will say, at the time, they did the right thing. Well, then, a couple of years later, this 13-year-old, who just so happens to live, and this is the oddest thing to me.
Yeah.
So people in Georgia, just or the South, probably cannot fathom this. In Oregon, they have these DOT sites where the DOT workers actually live at the site. And it is the only, like, structural residence. I think in this case, it was like 60 miles.
Yeah. Wow. So imagine from here almost to...
So if those of you in Floyd County, think about Tidings. If there was a DOT site there, there's four, I don't know, shotgun houses, mm-hmm. trailers. The people that work for the DOT and their families work or live on the site. They have all the sand, the salt, the gravel, whatever. Big fence around it. It's probably 10 acres. But they live there. And then they have to travel to get groceries and all that stuff. Like, that just boggled my mind.
Yeah.
And there's still places like that out west. I know there is. But around here, we just don't think about that. So this family was there. And in the beginning, the way the story unfolded on the documentary I watched was this guy and his sister, basically their dad was an abusive piece of shit.
Mm-hmm.
And so mom finally left after he walked through about four restraining orders and beat the shit out of all the kids, you know, both of them and the mom. So, well, she finds this DOT worker in Oregon. Great guy. And he's like, you know, loving and all this stuff. Well,
little did they know.
Yeah. He is a fucking predator.
Yeah. Serial killer.
And that's basically what they'd start. Well, the sister goes missing. She was 13. And I'm like giving you the cliff notes, but basically this all happens on Highway 20 between Newport, which is on the Pacific, not the specific.
Specifically,
but the Pacific Ocean. Basically, it's on the Highway 20. It's 170 miles. It goes through the Cascade Foothills and the Willamette Valley, Oregon's coastal range. It's a beautiful drive.
Yeah.
Just don't fucking break
down. Don't pull over.
Yeah. So there was a man called John Arthur Aykroyd, not related to Dan, because Dan's from Canada, so don't be throwing no hate.
This guy was not a Ghostbuster.
No, he was not. And he had worked on, they had DOT, I equate it to DOT mechanics. Basically, if you broke down or you had car trouble, he would show up. It's kind of like a hero unit in Atlanta.
Yeah.
And it was just weird.
Which was a perfect job for him because he never really actually had to check in with anybody.
No,
he was always on his own accord, free roaming.
He could be gone for like 10 or 12 days at a time,
yep.
Just traveling that 170 miles. And he would check in. There's other sites, like DOT sites for the state, and he would check in. But basically, he worked that job from 1970s. I'm sorry, I'm hungry. From 1970s to 1990s.
I was like, I don't have that sound effect on my board. Where did that come from?
And the original lady, Miss Kay Turner, she disappeared in 1978.
Mm-hmm.
What's funny is Mr. Aykroyd just so happens to conveniently find her clothes in the middle of fucking nowhere.
Yep. And goes to the police and says,
hey,
I bet it's that missing girl Kay Turner y'all been looking for.
Like, just rubbing it in her face.
Yeah.
Just taunting them.
Yeah.
And he, like, dude, the picture of him, he is like grade A neck beard piece of shit.
Yeah.
I just, like, the more I watched that documentary, here's the cool thing about that documentary, though. And a lot of times when you watch stuff like that, you're like, man, the fucking cop screwed the pooch on that one. They all knew. They knew.
Yeah.
They knew this guy was a predator.
Yes.
They knew this guy was a serial killer, probably. And they just could not tie it to him. So.
And you got to think about the time frame, too. We really wasn't digging into serial killers in the 70s at that point.
Well, no, you still had Son of Sam.
Yep.
Dickhead and his Beetle.
It was all new. It was a new thing that they were trying to.
Yeah.
So.
They hone in on Kay Turner's case, and then I think 2 years go by, and that's when his stepdaughter disappears.
Yep.
And then...
And you got two other girls.
Oh, no. Yeah, 2 years later, I'm sorry, a year before Kay Turner dies, he's at a bar.
Yeah.
Picks up an indigenous woman,
yep.
Drags her in there, and she basically somehow, by the grace of God, convinces him
That's the one that got away. Was that Marlene?
Yeah, Marlene Gabrielson. Yeah. It was in 77. She was 20 years old. She was in Sisters, Oregon for a rodeo with her husband. They got into an argument and they'd been drinking. And so she left and she got, how do they always find these fucking pieces of shit? And she's like, hey, can you give me a ride? She's a newborn, had a newborn baby at home. She's like, I need to get back home to my baby. And of course, Aykroyd is, he's like, yeah, I'll take you. And so he's driving her back. She fell asleep. She woke up an hour later. He had pulled off into the highway and he was holding a knife to her neck. And he actually drug her in the woods and ripped off her jeans, cut off her underwear and her boots with a knife. And he raped her. And she'd actually pled to, you know, please just take me home. I just had a baby. I just, you know, take me to my mother-in-law's house. And he asked her, he said, will you be my girlfriend? And she said, yes, I would love to be your girlfriend.
Like, here's the thing.
She said what she had to do.
Yes.
Like she was like, and I feel bad for her because she's got a lot of PTSD.
No doubt.
That she rides Harleys now and like probably wraps her own tampons because she's so tough now.
But yeah.
It was like forged at this time. He basically, after he got through, after he said that, he said, I don't know what to do with you. And she said, you could take me home and I'll never say a word.
Yep.
Like that's the, like a lot of people, because I believe 77 was it. I think she was the first.
Yes, I do too. Yeah. I do too.
And I think he acted on an impulse and they all have that whatever McDonald triad thing, you know, where they burn cats and piss their beds and shit. I really think, and she pled on, or I guess she pulled on the fact that I think at that time he had just married and that the two stepchildren were, I think less, the girl was less than 10.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, because the thing is, and anybody that's watched Criminal Minds is, the first one is just they act on an impulse and then they feel so guilty that they wait. And then there, it's like an itch. They've got a scratch. And then that itch keeps coming back.
And the rape wasn't enough.
Right. It didn't. While it didn't satisfy. Satisfied a part of it, it didn't fully satisfy it.
Yep.
And so she explains. She's like, if you just take me home, I have a newborn baby. I've got to take care of that. And somehow it fucking worked.
And the worst part of this whole story, and you can go back way back on an episode we did. It was the missing Indigenous women in Canada. We did an episode on that. It goes right back to this. She went to the police. They did a rape kit on her. She described him to a T. Said the burly man drug her in the woods, raped her, and the police did not prosecute him.
Even though everything corroborated her
they
story.
They treated her as a subhuman because she was
indigenous. On the firewater.
Yeah. And she was a drunk, just, you know, treated like she was a drunk whore. And that... And if you did see the interview with her, she literally could have, if they would have investigated, they did investigate him. They called him in for questioning and they're like, oh, this is going to get thrown out. I don't think you need to worry about it. Yeah, it's just, you know,
push it.
This is what it is.
He drove her 46 miles, 46 fucking miles.
I wonder what kept
to get her back to her mother-in-law's house.
Yeah. 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 I wonder why he didn't kill her.
Did it have something to do with the baby, the way that she pleaded to it?
Could have been.
Well, he stops at his fucking house, goes in, takes a piss, and gets a soda.
Yeah. Like he,
with her in the car on the way back.
Yep.
And she said that she was trying to find some kind of distinguishing mark, like a mailbox number, some kind of, you know, something to identify the house. She even, like, played it up with the girlfriend accent.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Angle.
Thank you.
Yes. Yes.
The girlfriend angle and asked for his phone number.
Yeah.
And he didn't buy it. But it didn't click.
Can you, like, my thing is thinking about her, the fact that she had that type of know-how at that moment to be able to not be caught in the trauma of what she had gone through, but to be that cool under pressure to play that.
That's probably what saved her life.
That's what I'm saying. She was able to flip a switch and be able to play that.
Like, she explains that at the point where she knows that she's going to be raped, she said that all she had an outer body experience where all she could think about was that baby.
Yep.
And whatever she had to do to get back to her daughter, that's what was going to happen.
And
so she it's kind of one of those, she had a split personality at that point. Yeah. She had a psychological break.
She did. This is the other thing too, I think, which what was saved her was she didn't go crazy and act scared and try to get away from him, because that would heighten those senses that he had,
that he
would have killed her. You know, it would have been more of a
fight,
been more arousing. This unfortunately sounds horrible, to him.
But she played dead fish, so yeah. It wasn't any. She had no reaction.
Yep.
She just dealt with it and took it and went on.
Yep.
God dang y'all.
Yeah, when they question him, he tells police that she seduced him and mm-hmm. she ripped her own pants on his work truck, so he had to give her a pair of pants. Dude, he had a fucking answer for everything. And then later in life, was it the early 90s when they brought him to trial for... They got him on case, first one.
Yep.
They finally get him on case. But they interviewed that crazy bastard, and he's bragging. He's still bragging it on the TV.
He rubs it right in their face. Like, he's so arrogant the way he talks to the police. Like, he knew they didn't have enough to get him, but he would just keep giving them carrots, like leaving breadcrumbs, you know, just keep dragging him along as far as he can. Yeah, that's exactly what it was. But yeah, the thing, go back with Kay Turner. You know, they looked for her. The poor husband was the suspect for the longest time. And that's why they took their attention away from him initially, because they were so dead set on convicting the husband. And so Aykroyd was like, basically like, I did it. You know, this is why you should investigate me for doing this, because XYZ. But the police are like, oh no, it's definitely the husband. The husband did this, blah 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 blah. But then when he shows up into the is it a gas station or like a little general store?
It's a general store, and he says, hey, I found some clothes. I think his ruse was he had pulled over to take a piss, and think he walks in there, but he's so nonchalant. He's like, hey, he buys something. Mm-hmm. The guy that owned the general store said,
he's just cool. He's kind of, yeah,
I think I found that missing runner woman's clothes. And just nonchalantly, he's like, what? They've been looking for her for, it was months by then. Yeah. And,
That guy's interview was weird.
Yeah.
It was odd. Yeah. But anyway,
but the whole odd thing about that, she with Kay Turner's case, they believe that he didn't do that one alone. He thinks that Roger Beck,
they showed up.
They were fellow hunters.
Yeah, because Roger's wife is his alibi that night, mm-hmm. and then one of the lead detectives goes back when
she gets away from Roger.
Yeah, they divorced, and so one of the lead detectives goes back when they reopened the stepdaughter's case, and so he's like, you know, I was young and stupid. He said, I just drove out to her house, I think he drove all the way to California. She had moved to California.
Yeah, she moved to California, yep.
And he just knocks on the door, and she goes, I was expecting y'all a long time mm-hmm. before now.
Yeah.
And basically said, I was scared for my life, that's why I alibied them. They both walked in covered in blood.
Yep. And then their excuse was like they hit a deer, and then they skinned it out because Roger was poor and they needed some food. But then you go to the worst part of it too, man. Like if you watch that documentary that I had watched, we go to Rashanda Pickle was his 13-year-old his stepdaughter.
Yep.
Her mom Linda married Aykroyd in the mid-80s, and they had lived in Sandham Junction. In Oregon,
Santium,
22.
Yeah.
So it's the same. It's what you're talking about.
It's a little just, and it's
a pop up DOT.
Yeah.
Work site. She was abused by Aykroyd, physically and sexually abused. She would go to her friends and try to stay there. That she didn't want to go home, and they tried to hide her from her mom.
I'm sorry. He didn't find her clothes. He walked into the general store and said that he had found her remains.
Yes.
And described them to a T because he was out hunting with his rabbit dogs.
Yeah.
And one of the detectives, or maybe the medical examiner, had an aha moment and said, y'all need to talk to this guy because there's no way he could have described this one part if he hadn't have put that there.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's like he's planting it. he had, again, like Rashanda, she was trying to stay away from him. She was scared of him. He actually beat her and her brother. The mom in the interview is like, son, she's a couple of Fruit Loops shy of a box. But when I think he realized that she was talking to other people about what was going on in the house, that's when he took her off.
Yeah, because they interviewed some of her friends, and they said that they saw a huge, like, shift in her. Mm-hmm. And back then it would have been, and I apologize, but it would have been equated to all of a sudden she's withdrawn, she's wearing dark clothing, suicidal ideations, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. But, it's just the more you learned about... Well, and it says right here in one of the articles, in fifth grade, something shifted. She seemed withdrawn and tired. In class, she counted down the minutes, a sense of dread rising at the end of school. She confided in two girls who were her sisters. She cried as she told one of them that she was terrified of returning to the junction alone. She asked if she could sleep over. One time, she made a scene when it was time to go. Another time, they snuck her into their bedroom closet. The sisters knew why she was afraid, and that was because she confided that Aykroyd was molesting her.
And unfortunately, those girls were having the same thing done to them by someone living in their house.
Yeah, and that's Yeah, and it's so like...
I didn't find that. That's cool.
That whole dynamic in that town was so weird.
Man, it was. It really was. It's like something out of a...
Like The Hills Have Eyes, but it's movie. Not... They're not killing people.
Yeah.
It's just, it was... It's almost like the West Coast... And this... I'm not trying to stereotype, but it's... Poor, rural, southern, not necessarily coal towns, but it's just poor, rural, southern towns where you can't break the cycle. It's like the West Coast version of that.
Yeah. There's really no jobs.
No, there wasn't.
There's no way.
Because there's fucking nothing else.
To further, you know, better yourself other than that. I'll go back to this, too. I kind of forgot about this part. The brother, Byron... And Rashanda, Byron was the brother, the older brother. They actually went to their dad and told the dad what was going on. And so the dad threatened to get the police involved, and that's when she went missing.
But he had molested her, like, when she would go stay with him during the fucking summer.
I mean, it's like this kid didn't have a chance. She didn't have a chance.
And it's... And I just...
And the mom's like, I don't think he would have done nothing like that to hurt her. Like, just, man, zoned out.
And she's the one, the mom is the one, he gets Aykroyd, talks the mom into calling 911.
Yeah. He was smart enough, too, like, where, I don't know if it was this, if it was Rashanda's murder, or it was where Melissa Sanders and Sheila Swanson, we hadn't got to that one yet, but... He went somewhere where they knew they were doing some construction, some road work out there, and he was taking photos. So he created it. He was taking photos of an area, like he was creating an alibi for himself. Like, oh, well, I couldn't have done it because I was over here taking photos. These guys were over here working. They saw me. You know, he would place himself in places where he could give himself an alibi if somebody wasn't really digging hard enough to find him.
I will say that Bill Hanlon was the DA in Jefferson County up there, and he wasn't surprised when he got a call from the prosecutor in Linn County. And the guy said, before he said, hello, who his name is, he said, have you ever heard of John Aykroyd? And Hanlon said, I've been waiting on this call. Yes, I have.
Yep.
And they all, but that's the thing, man. They all fucking knew it. And so they find a rope in the back of his truck that's got blood on it and Rashonda's hair. And he's like, kids get bored out here. I mean, you know, she could have been. And the way he done it, the detectives and the DA, Bill Hanlon, was like,
it was enough doubt.
Yeah, basically, yeah. He said, if we'd have gone to court.
It created enough doubt.
He said he would have been
acquitted. It dropped all charges against him, yeah.
And so they basically said, despite knowing that he was guilty, knowing that he had killed two women at that point, they said, we had to keep everything close to the vest because we only got one shot at this.
But mm-hmm. What kind of person leaves that type of evidence laying out for somebody to find, has the ability...
Psycho narcissist.
Mm-hmm. That's what I meant. That's exactly what I was going to say.
That's exactly what it was.
Because he had in his mind the excuse he was going to give, so he was like, I'm going to tease them and tone them a little bit, but they're still not going to have enough to get me.
He's like the hillbilly inbred Hannibal Lecter. almost.
He really is. And the thing is, like, they go over, like, Hanlon gives that other DA all the interviews from Case, and they both, like, go back over it, and they're like, man, he's guilty as shit for both of them. They're like, yeah, but we don't have that one thing, that one fucking thing that just sinks his ass.
There wasn't the nail in the coffin.
And I can't, and here's the thing, we always say it on our podcast, look, we'll shit on you in a heartbeat if you're in law enforcement, but I'm going to tell you something. If you do what you're supposed to do in a law enforcement or a district attorney situation, I cannot give you enough praise. Like, yeah. Bill Hanlon, the two detectives, if I ever run into them, I'll buy them a beer.
For sure.
And that's my thing. Like, just don't be a dick. Know when you're over your head and know it. I mean, because it's going to be a shit or get off the pot moment. And we say it all the time. Because, you know, Johnny played quarterback in Cumberland County, Missouri, and he going to be a deputy now.
Yeah.
Well, if Johnny rolls up on a fucking murder, Johnny's got to have enough sense. I don't know what the fuck. I'm going to fuck
this up. I need help.
I'm going to call the state. And then when the state gets there, if they're fucking around, Johnny needs to call his supervisor and be like, look, the state's fucking this up. Call the feds. Kick it up. Keep kicking it up. Be loud as you can be.
It doesn't happen, though.
No, because there's like, God gave me this badge, and I'm going to save everybody. No, you're going to fuck us.
Yep, and then you're going to end up not knowing what the hell happened. We'll go to Melissa Sanders and Sheila Swanson. Melissa 17, Sheila 19 have been camping. They were in Beverly Beach State Park with the Sanders family, spring of 1992. The girls actually became bored and decided to hitchhike. When the Sanders woke up in the morning, the girls were gone and presumed to have left with friends to bring them back to Sweet Home is where they lived.
Yeah, but the backstory on that's even more fucked up.
It really is. Because
he starts hanging out at this restaurant, and he's at the time, isn't he like late 30s, early 40s?
Yes.
But he's trying to pass off it.
No. He's like, they're like, he would, one of them came from a shitty situation. Mm-hmm. The other one, not as shitty.
Because the one girl, they really didn't care about either one of them, to be honest.
But they would...
Family members.
That's what pissed me off. They would... One of them didn't know where she was going to have a meal. So he would buy her a meal at whatever this restaurant was. And I cannot remember the name of the restaurant. But...
I'm scanning for it.
All right, let's go back, though. Let me back up. And I apologize for this. So between Kay Turner and Rashonda, and they both... They know his ass is guilty. What does the fucking state highway department do? They transfer his ass further towards the coast to a community college town where basically it's prime hunting ground. And one of the detectives on that documentary says when he heard what happened, he said, what in the hell are y'all doing? You have just put a line in the lamb's pen.
And the guy that was running the DOT side up there, they told him they're transferring him there. And he's like, I don't want that guy here. He's like, he's evil. He is evil personified. We do not want him here.
And it goes back to he found whatever the name of that fucking restaurant was, because that was the little town where they just all they all hung out. And they back then they got on the CB radios. And that's how basically kids, it was before called, there were cell phones, we used to mount these damn antennas in our car. And we'd talk to each other.
They said it was something simple, like something like Sherry's Restaurant or something.
It's still open.
Yeah.
And it's like it reminded me of...
Just a closer where other teens and locals always hung out.
It reminded me of like Shoney's. You remember when like late at night we'd go eat the fucking breakfast bar because they'd put that shit out at Shoney's like 11:30? And I mean, gorge yourself.
Yeah.
But that's what it reminded me of. Like they could hang out. It was a quasi Shoney's Applebee's. It had bar food. It had... home cooked meal kind of stuff, but they're all still like hanging out there. That's the rally point. That was the loop, you know, where they cruised and stuff like that. But man, and there's one lady in the that they interviewed that was friends with that pair that said that she had this weird feeling when he would come up because he acted like childish. He tried to act like he was 20 young. Something. Yeah. And was real jealous. And one of the girls had to sit on his lap and he would buy her some fries or something like that. And she was like, fuck it. I'll buy you French fries. Get just off this creepy bastard. Yeah. That lap. So yeah, I mean, it's just, and then they fuck up. Melissa and Sheila fuck up and tell him they're going camping.
Yep.
Where they're going camping.
And it's like open season then. So kind of, we'll kind of go there. Looks like Aykroyd shows up. He goes back to the DOT site. Doesn't think anybody's there. He goes walking in. There's actually two workers there.
Is that when he cleaned his truck out?
Yes. Yeah. So he goes in covered in blood, head to toe, and there's blood all in the back of his truck.
Well, he's a crusty-looking
and they're like, too. What the hell?
Yeah.
It's like, what the hell? And he's like, oh, I hit a deer. You know, I got it all over. I skinned it out. Yeah, I skinned it out. But those guys now, they reflect back and think about Melissa and Sheila's body. Thinks about Melissa and Sheila missing. And they're like, he killed those two girls.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, that was their blood. That was human blood on this guy. When they found Sheila and Melissa's bodies, they found about a month before Aykroyd was actually charged with Kay Turner's murder. At this time, he decided not to be interviewed by the police. And there was no forensic evidence that tied him to the murder of those two girls. Investigators found Aykroyd had met with the girls often, and he actually offered them a ride and invited them to go to a party he was hosting over in Newport at a campground. And then Aykroyd was seen there this is where I think he was taking photos. He was seen there three times near where the girls' bodies were found off a logging road off of Highway 20. And it looks like Roy Benson, an investigator for Lincoln County District Attorney's Office, made the likely concession that between the cases of Marlene Gabrielson in 77, Kay Turner in 78, followed by Aykroyd's stepdaughter's disappearance in 1990, and then Sheila and Melissa in 1992, they actually reopened Sheila and Melissa's case in 2012. Mm-hmm. Linda Snow and Benson doing some investigating, and Benson actually noticed similarities such as not have buried remains. They were just kind of out laying around. They were taken around the time of connection to wildlife and then hunting.
They also
statements
read, they he was out, giving. Yeah. They figured out he was taking time off of work around those times. And it was always making a connection between wildlife and hunting. It's always what his statements were.
He wasn't lying. He was
hunting.
Yeah.
But, and the thing is, like, he had...
That's when he passed all his polygraph tests.
That's what kills me. Like,
passed them, dude.
He tells just enough truth.
Yep.
Because
when he says he's out hunting, he wasn't lying. He was actually... No, he was out hunting. Yeah.
I'm amazed that they got him on Kay Turner.
Me too.
But they could not get him to crack on Rashonda or the two girls.
They never found Rashonda's body.
Never.
Never.
And in the documentary, the brother breaks down, man. It's pitiful.
But have y'all seen, the other cases that they say that they think he was responsible
for? Oh, yeah. They start doing, they go down Highway 20, and there's like six
Jane Does.
There's five total.
Yeah.
You got Linn County Jane Doe, Findlay Creek Jane Doe.
And it's all just off of Highway 20. And they said, basically, back then, there was a lot of... I guess not necessarily traveling nurses, but it would be like if you're around here, you'd travel from, say, Trine to Rome to work at Floyd or Redmond. But think about it as nothing but fucking pine trees, and there's a highway.
It may be one gas station
between
here and there.
And so if you have a breakdown, all of a sudden, hey, it's the state mechanic. He's going to take care of me, and then... because you're like, thank God somebody's here.
He had the perfect
and
job.
Let your damn guard down
to do
and
what
boom,
he did.
He strikes.
The sad thing too that I'd take a look over Melissa and Sheila. Even though they had enough evidence for a grand jury, and Aykroyd was already in prison, they deemed it too expensive to prosecute that case, and the case was closed, unsolved.
Well, Fatboy. Didn't he die of a heart attack?
He did. He died in prison. Yep. And just to go what Cousin Johnny's talking about, the further cases that they believe that he was responsible for, this is all in the same area, all along Highway 20. You got skeletal remains found, and this is odd because this was before the kidnap and rape. But they found a woman's remains July 24th, 1976, along the highway. She had believed
that wasn't his first.
That could have been her first.
Yeah, but not the other lady.
She was a Caucasian between 18 and 40, 4 foot 11 to 5 foot. Levi jeans, platform sandals, fringe leather coat were among discovered. Again, remains uncovered. They weren't. He didn't try to hide it. And then you had Rodney Lynn Garrison, 15-year-old or 14-year-old, and then Karen Jean Lee were last seen in 1977, May 24th, 26th, respectively. They believe Grissom left with Lee hitchhiking to California, disappeared 2 days after. A friend called from a payphone in Lebanon, Oregon, after leaving home. They said, "Our ride is here. We've got to go," which indicated they got in a vehicle with somebody. And then the couple's possessions, they were found along or close to Highway 20, and included Rodney's wristwatch, some of his belongings, along with Karen's trousers, some notebook pages, a blouse she had made. Karen's jeans looked like they had been cut off. So that's, you know, remember he cut off the first lady's, cut off her boots and her underwear. And then Elizabeth Musler, 22, vanished in a downtown Lebanon in the summer of 77. He was very active in that time.
Yeah, very.
And then he tapered off until his stepdaughter.
That's what
went
I was
missing.
About to say. So I think he has his initial. So you're looking at the initial case in 76 or his first in 76. It's not really like a spree to K. But after K, I don't know if he got afraid. If he perfected it and knew.
Could have been.
That he had, now he had the perfect alibi, not only his job, but he was a hunter. And there's always deer being struck. Mm-hmm. Then his daughter goes missing. But, you know, the way that he explains it, and the mom, god dang.
Dude, she made me sick.
He convinces her to call 911, and then the dispatcher has enough insight to say, well, who was the last person to see her alive? And the mom, like,
duh,
the wind of liquor she was, yeah, like her stepfather.
Yeah.
What's his name? Aykroyd.
Ding,
like,
ding,
oh,
ding, ding. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, like, he could have had a spree.
I think he did.
Like, between those, what was it, 76 to 78? Was K in 78?
K was, yes.
So you've got what, 4 or 5?
Well, you've got another one.
Like 5 or 6.
So K, what was K?
Between those 2 years.
K was at Christmas, December, okay?
Yeah, and then it wasn't for what, another year before Rashonda?
But they're talking about from 76, you had Swamp Mountain Jane Doe, you had Rodney Grissom, Karen Lee, Elizabeth Musler, and then in 78.
This was before.
Yeah, then you had Lynn County Jane Doe. And at the end of 78, you had Finley Creek Jane Doe.
Yeah.
And then you have 77 in there.
In the middle of it.
Is the girl that got away. So that's 7 victims.
Which, again, goes back to what you're saying. That means she wasn't the first. So what in the world kept him from... It had to be her playing that
dead
role
fish.
Like she did.
How about this? In 1986, two Forest Service workers found partial human skull, some additional bone fragments, one tooth near a government camp. Off of US 26 on Mount Hood, what is it? Clackamas County, Oregon. The skull was not identified until, a medical examiner's office got a grant to begin DNA testing. The, analysis on more than 100 sets of unidentified human remains, including the Mount Hood skull, genealogical investigation on the DNA testing of the skull identified as Wanda Ann Herr, 19 years old, was a potential match. She vanished in June 1976. So they found the remains in 86, but she went missing from a group home in Gresham, Oregon in 1976. And no missing person report was filed at the time because they assumed she was a runaway. So
that was the key back then.
Yeah.
Dude, just running away.
He killed all these women.
Oh, yeah.
He definitely killed all these
women. Now, I did not know this. So, case wraps up in December. And then he allegedly dies of complications from a heart disease. The state police assigned to investigate his death found Fat Boy on the floor of his cell, his sleep apnea machine still going, and the breathing tube stuck in his throat, left over from a last-ditch effort to save him. Basically, they said that whoever told them they were trying to save him fucking killed him with that breathing tube because they had knocked his false teeth down and into the almost his top of his stomach.
Below his collarbone. Into his chest cavity. It was still too good for him. There's one of the most disturbing parts out of this whole thing.
I'm almost like that guy that was like, he just kept talking, and so I beat his fucking head against the wall.
Yeah, I guarantee that's what happened.
Because I think they took that fucking breathing
tube. Shut him up.
And jammed that shit in there and watched him try to fucking breathe. And I know that's horrible for me to sit there and say that.
No, it's not.
But for this piece of shit, it's still not good enough.
Look, there was a very graphic point in this whole story about his stepdaughter going missing. And he was going over details while he was being interrogated or questioned to the point to where he got aroused and ejaculated in his pants while he was being questioned about it.
While he was being questioned. Yes. Are you fucking serious?
Yeah. And, dude, kudos to the cop that was in there. He's a better man than me.
I'd have killed that son of a bitch. That had to put me
Whatever we're recording with, I'm just shoving that down his throat, like, kill him. And the other gross thing about after the murder, the day that she went missing, he never had sex with his wife. Never. They never had sex. And the day she went missing, and he even bragged on it, that he had sex with his wife, and it was the best sex he had ever had. The best sex. They had some fun. Boy, they had some real fun, is what he said. He said it was great. It was the best sex we ever had. The day she went missing.
God, that's fucked up, y'all.
Yeah. So, yeah, cramming that thing down his throat with his teeth, still too good for him, so. I just want to get everybody just kind of understand what we're doing here. The first of the year's coming. Holiday schedule is going to be a little kooky. We're going to try to get in here and get as many podcasts as we can before the end of the year's out. But just know that coming up in the new year, we're hopefully going to explore some. I've come across this. I don't know if you guys are aware of it. There are some medical monsters out there in the world. And they've done some terrible, egregious things to people all to get paid. And so we're going to start covering some cases on some doctors who are nonetheless monsters. One of the guys that I came across was a guy who was diagnosing his patients with cancer. And they didn't have cancer. And he was putting them through chemo and everything because he was making millions and millions. He was killing all these people, making millions. That's just one, an example of many cases there are out there. Guys, I appreciate y'all getting in here. It's been a while. It's been fun. I needed it. I missed it.
Yeah, for sure.
And I look forward to doing it again really, really soon.
Well, during them holiday breaks, I mean, we'll just knock them out and just get slobber knocked in here. We'll get to sweet wheat. I got a whole, like, single barrel bottle. One of our fans sent me and the wrong person a fifth of whiskey from a each.
Wow.
From a little distillery in Texas. So when I finally get it, I'm supposed to get it Saturday. It's a cool, like the bottle's like a cool old gas pump.
Oh, cool.
It is. So it may taste like filtered asshole, but we're going
to
try it.
We'll sample it. I'd love to sample that.
Don't threaten me with a good time.
So we got that. We had a holiday bourbon chocolate sent to us.
Oh,
stop,
man.
So, yeah.
No. Stop, or I'm going to.
All I'm getting is hate mail.
I'm going to get erect and ejaculate in my pants.
On that note, we're going to have to get out of here.
Bye.
Later.
Later.